Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Colonel Barry Turner, who's retired from the British Army, where he was an engineer. And, of course, we're going to be talking about the problems of Great Britain. But the problems of Great Britain and the problems of America are interlocked because, America originally came out of British heritage. But even more than that, of course, there is a linkage, a very strong linkage between the rulers of Great Britain and the rulers of America today. And we do have rulers, and sometimes it really doesn't seem to matter very much whether here in America it's the Republicans or the Democrats. They're all carrying out the same programs. And, of course, the same thing is going on with Great Britain today. But today, both of our nations are in serious economic problems. In fact, Great Britain is having terrible problems as far as its banking is concerned, the value of its currency. People are even talking about perhaps there's going to be a default by Great Britain. And even more frightening is the fact that they're even talking about there might be a default on debt here in the United States. But don't you worry, the government has a wonderful plan. They're just going to print up more money and print up more money and print up more money. After all, government can never runs out of money, does it? But, of course, what does that do to the value of your life savings? Colonel Turner, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Hello, it's nice to be back.
Well, why don't you just pick up the story there and tell us what's going on over in Great Britain and, of course, how that is going to impact on us here.
Well, I suppose one could say it's a waiting game, and I don't think anybody would like to say what the next problem is going to be. What I notice is that... of course, the talking heads of the media are all of a sudden becoming concerned with the possibility of government-created debt-free money rather than pumping money into the banks to refloat the banks. And it's a bit late on. If they've known this for so long, why haven't they promoted this message in the media before? Journalist in the Daily Telegraph goes to the extent of saying that those responsible for the present situation should be severely punished. In fact, you know, jailed. Now, this is pretty extreme language. But, of course, I was talking, as I said before, to Ada Parker, a financial journalist in South Africa. We were on the phone probably once a week. But she's been dead 5 years, and she was saying this was going to happen. And anybody could see it was going to happen, but they seem to have sleepwalked into this. I think it's been a competitive treadmill.
Well, I think it's important that the people here in the United States understand what debt money is. And the fact is, our central bank and your central banks are not branches of the government. They're privately owned banks that are set up by the bankers to benefit the bankers, and they create money, and then we have to pay interest to them on the money that they've created out of nothing. That's an incredible system.
Well, I mean... Really, the mind boggles because it is said that we are borrowing amount of money, billions of it, to bail out the banks. Now, it would appear if we borrow rather than create money, we're borrowing from the system economic system that caused the problem in the first place.
Absolutely.
And if everybody is broke, who's got money to lend?
Well, of course, the banks have money. They lend it to the government so they can give it back to them, and so that, you know, and it doesn't make sense. It's a round robin. And yet we have to pay interest to the banks while we lend the banks money. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Colonel Barry Turner right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Barry Turner, who's retired from the British military. We're talking to him from Great Britain. And we're talking about the fact that England is having terrible financial problems as well. In fact, they're even talking over there about doing away with the debt money. And debt money is money where you actually have to pay the banks, the central bank, interest on all the money that they create out of nothing. And of course, the banks come out really doing very, very well. But now the banks say that they're out of money, so we've got to lend them money. And if we lend the money, where do we get the money from? Well, we have to borrow it from the system, from the central bank, so we can give the banks money. And there's something wrong with what's going on today. Well, you pick up the story there, Colonel.
Well, an interesting event. A few years ago, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, Prime Minister of Malaysia, was concerned about the financial system circling around the Far East. And the reading is that, of course, having just about bled the Western countries dry, they were going to circle around the Far East. George Soros and his mates, currency dealers, speculators, and so on, were hovering in the Far East. Now, James Gibbs Stuart is, I suppose you could call, the doyen of modern money reformers, economic and monetary reformers. And he was asked to advise Dr. Mahathir Mohamad on the measures he should take, and he did so. And I've been reading this evening earlier. What he said is, of course, introduce currency controls so the speculators can't suck the currency out of the country for their own gain. Secondly, resort to your own natural resources. It's the old story. You have all the wherewithal, the skills, the materials, the labor, the facilities. Not to need to borrow money to make it work. It's all there. All you have to do is introduce your own money, as it were, so that you've got a means of exchange.
But I don't really think the people in charge want a solution because they do not want sovereign nations. They want to do away with national sovereignty, keep us in this situation of globalism as our wealth from the United States is systematically bled out, just as the wealth of Great Britain has been bled out for so many years by your system of assertive internationalism. We'll be right back here with Colonel Barry Turner.
Hello?
You go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
Yes. It's absolutely right. I'd like to get on in a few minutes, if I may, and join up a few dots because I've been reading, or listening rather, to your interview with Norman Dodds. And I can see, you know, the thread of the whole thing. Just looking for a moment at some of the cuttings I've got. Now, the British Barclays Bank has been in trouble. They've been looking to the Persian Gulf states for finance. Now, here we have a report in the Guardian newspaper of the 23rd of this month. Hedge fund made millions betting on Barclays crash. Now, this really is obscene. I mean, we're at the height of this crisis, perhaps not at the height yet, but here we have the financial markets making money just gambling. We've got another one here. New Star loses $17 million on a hedge bet. Now, this is a fund manager who bet the wrong way. Now, this is plain gambling. It is criminal, and it is so barefaced, it's unbelievable. Here's another heading. Ex-layman chief sells $13 million home to wife for $100. Now, I mean, if ever there was a scam, and done no doubt legally, I mean, where is society going?
Well, of course, he wanted to be sure that in case he got sued because of his crooked actions with Lehman Brothers, that they wouldn't be able to take his home. So by giving it to his wife and separating their finances, why, of course, this is how he gets around it. But these people were crooks. Lehman Brothers were doing all sorts of things that were just totally irresponsible, and they destroyed one of the major banks here and, of course, helped to drag down our whole financial system. But he was looking ahead. He knew it was going to happen, and that's why he sold his palatial estate for $100.
Well, there's another one here, which is another direction in which the financial markets are taking us. Polluters cash in on carbon trading. Now, you see, we've got this worldwide concern about the environment and carbon emissions. Now, I've mentioned this before. It must be two, three years ago. The moment the carbon trading question came about, institutions, manufacturers, and so on, being able to trade their allowances, the Financial Times jumped on it and saw money to be made here. But you see, here we are, where firms, companies are supposed to be economizing in their carbon emissions, but when they fall within the limits, the balance, they're trading off money. And of course, the brokers, the carbon trading brokers, will be doing the manipulation, organizing this.
But of course, what's so absurd about that, Colonel, is the fact that supposedly, I mean, there's this real problem, so we've got to do something about the emissions, about the pollution. So if you are a major polluter, you can buy carbon credits, and then you can keep right on polluting, so you haven't cut down the pollution at all. And of course, China, communist China, India, are not the biggest polluters in the world today, aren't even involved in this. This is one of the greatest scams of the world. It is really all about redistribution of wealth and sending the wealth of American corporations overseas so that supposedly we can continue polluting. But what's that going to do to the atmosphere? It's not going to do anything. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's rhetoric over reality. And the average individual is so confused and intentionally confused by what's going on, he can't see that it is a great scam. It is a vehicle by which we can justify transferring the wealth of America and Great Britain and the British and American people. Of course, to others, to foreign countries, as we set out to redistribute the wealth of the world. But we can't let the American people or the British people understand what's really going on. So we cloak it under, oh my goodness, pollution, carbon emissions. And it is simply one of the great scams. And of course, over here, Al Gore, who's the great champion of global warming, made countless millions of dollars on this scam. But you go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, I'll give you another slant on this. Another cutting I've got here, time to cut out the bankers and kill PFI. Now, PFI is a private public finance initiative by which projects such as the building and running of hospitals or schools are operated by private companies in conjunction with the government. Now, it's a one-way ticket. Because for many years now, this government in particular has been selling off its assets. Now, this began with Margaret Thatcher, because I remember the late Harold Macmillan, well into his dotage, was pictured with Margaret Thatcher. And he was on record as saying we should not sell off the family silver. Now, you see, this is where the third world has been ripped off too. Even the earth, the territory has been made into a financial control by investing in the third world, buying up the territory, literally. And of course, the private utilities, water, electricity, and so on. Now, our main buildings, our Ministry of Defence buildings and our government buildings, have been sold off. Now, we rent them back, lease back, sale and lease back. But you see, this is merely pawning what you've got, your capital assets, and then renting them. Now, soon, what you get for the selling off, the capital you accrue from the selling off, is soon gone servicing debt. And it simply cannot work. And this public-private finance initiative, where hospitals and schools are concerned, has been legislated in such a way that these private companies, these private investment companies, are going to reap huge profits on the basis of the agreements that have been drawn up in the future. So what Brown, now Prime Minister, formerly Chancellor of the Exchequer, for the best part of 10 years, had done is to pawn the national assets and push ahead into for future generations a massive debt. Now, that's fine, but when the private finance initiative companies start going belly up with this crash, that part of the prop for these projects vanishes. So who finishes up footing the bill? The British taxpayer, the government.
Well, I think what you're seeing is a great transfer of wealth. In fact, I think right today we're seeing the greatest transfer of wealth that has ever occurred. And of course, when these companies go belly up, you know, then who is going to be there to buy them up? And of course, it's going to be this, what I call a cabal of financiers, the very people who created this problem. And, of course, when the whole system begins to crumble, they'll be there and they'll have the money and they'll get it one way or another and just create it out of nothing and buy up the wealth. We are seeing a phenomenal transfer of wealth. The greatest transfer of wealth ever recorded in human history is in the process of taking place today.
Could I sort of switch the line of the discussion slightly?
You certainly could. Go right ahead.
As you know, I've quoted Nicholas Murray Butler more than once, and he's worth quoting again, yet again, in 1937, when he addressed a banquet in London, with the words, "Communism is the instrument with which the financial world can topple national governments and then erect a world government with a world police and world money."
And I think, would you mind repeating that, because I think it's so important that people understand that communism was a vehicle to centralize power with government. And in fact, communism has been financed from its inception by people here in the United States, by our financiers, and literally by our own government, as we are financing communism in communist China today. Where did they get the money to build those magnificent cities? Why, the World Bank, which we finance, the International Monetary Fund, we finance, the East Asian Bank, which we finance, the Asian Development Bank, which we finance, American banks, subsidized by our own government, and General Motors has now 8 plants over there, and General Motors is saying, but you've got to give us money here in the United States. We're going to collapse if you don't give us money. And they're building their plants all throughout the rest of the world. But you go right ahead, Colonel.
Repeating this statement, communism is the instrument with which the financial world, can topple national governments and then erect a world government with world police and world money. Now, this leads me to join up these dots, because there's a pattern here. And I go back to your interview with Norman Dodds. It was fascinating because he says, of course, as you know, that Rowan Gaythorne, president of the Ford Foundation, stated that the objective of the tax-free foundations was to change society in order that it will merge comfortably, I think was the term, with the communist system. Now, looking at that and the way that Norman Dodds, as the Rees Commission investigator, in, what was it, 1953, something like that, was given access to the archives of the Carnegie Trust. And, of course, was it the Carnegie Management Board in 1953 who suggested he went to the archives to get the answers?
Right.
And the answers were so staggering then Clearly, the Carnegie Board had no idea what was in the archives. And you get this continuity, because when it was stated that the way to change society was a major war in 1908, clearly there was an evidence of a conspiracy of some sort.
They were planning on the First World War as a means of bringing about the world government, and they're still working to get it.
Well, if I didn't believe in conspiracy or was circumspect about the term before, I certainly believe it now, because in modern times, in the last 200 years plus, of course, if we start with the Illuminati, there is your thread, because the Carnegie Board may not have been aware of what was in the archive in 1908, but they were certainly charged with carrying on the philosophy. And I'm afraid, invoke my analogy of cricket, where, you know, cricket in the 18th century may not be recognizable today in terms of the dress and the equipment, but it is still cricket. And if you reel forward from the Illuminati to 1908 to 1953, it is still conspiracy. I mean, it's so logical to me. And, you know, this is where we're going. And, of course, we have, as we've discussed before, the creation of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute of International Affairs in this country, and the control in the United States of the State Department, and much the same equivalent over here. And it has to be at the heart of what is going on, because this is the system, of course, which is controlling finance, or controlling nations on behalf of the finance element, to keep people, as it were, as a whole under control. And this is another aspect of the same problem. Now, we look at the part of Nicholas Murray Butler's comments about the Soviet Union. Now, it's very interesting because we are talking about, in this country, Soviet oligarchs moving in and buying up elements of our industries, buying up our very profitable football clubs, our leading soccer football clubs. And the latest one is that another Russian ex-KGB man is buying the London Evening Standard. Now, this is a traditional London newspaper. It's the one surviving major London newspaper. And why is a Russian oligarch able to buy up our parts of our system, our society, our newspaper? We know Murdoch's done it in a big way already. But a Russian oligarch, where's he getting his money from? Where did they get the money from? Because there are a large number of them about the West. And this chap is suggesting this is in the British Guardian newspaper, that he wants an editorial board consisting of, amongst others, Mikhail Gorbachev, Jacques Chirac, and Tony Blair.
Well, they will certainly be impartial as far as bringing the news to the British people, won't they?
Well, what a choice. I mean, Blair, of all people, and the other two, I would worry about. I mean, it's interesting, en passant, Tony Blair appears to have some credibility across the water.
You mean here in the United States?
I think he's regarded with a fair amount of contempt and mistrust.
Well, I think that those of us who know what's going on certainly don't trust Tony Blair at all. We'll be right back here with Colonel Turner. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Colonel Turner was just talking about the fact that one of the major remaining newspapers in London has been bought up by one of the communist oligarchs. They don't call them communists, but they were all part of the KGB. And when this phony, at least in my estimation, phony fall of communism took place, these people were allowed to buy up Russian industry, and they immediately became overnight billionaires, but they are still communists. And some of them are living in England, and one of them recently purchased a major British newspaper, and then will use that to propagandize the British people. And the trouble is, if people don't understand what's going on, they're going to be taken in just as the people here in the United States are taken in by the people who control the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, which is certainly owned today by Rupert Murdoch, who is a naturalized citizen who, when he was a student in Australia, used to, of course, keep a bust of Lenin on his desk all the time. In fact, when he was a student, he was known as Rupert the Red. But you go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, over here, we've got Blair. I don't know what I'd call him, but I'm told he gets £170,000 per lecture appearance.
Oh, he's a piker next to Bill Clinton. During the last 10 years or 8 years since Bill Clinton left office, he has been given $492 million for his foundation from people who just like Bill Clinton so much. And anybody who thinks, of course, they're going to get anything returned for giving him $492 million has got to believe in a conspiracy. And that's in addition to the $110 million that Bill and Hillary have earned during the last 10 years. Boy, they must give awfully good talks. But you go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, this one, in what is a left-wing newspaper, The Guardian, left-inclined, I suppose one could say, logically would be supporting Tony Blair as a Labour Party Prime Minister, although it's International Socialist rather than Labour in his case, as we know. It starts, like a prize poodle at Crufts. Tony Blair is being honoured for obedience. Crufts, the well-known dog show. And this is a pretty contemptuous reference to him, because he's due to receive, he may have received it already, from George Bush, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, for having been such a staunch ally. Now, Blair, quite honestly, in my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of people, a lot of commentators, really is a vainglorious Walter Mitty kind of figure. There may have been people behind him propping him up, but, you know, his moment of glory was strutting to the podium alongside George Bush when they were about to destroy Iraq. And on other occasions associated with that sort of episode. And it refers to Blair's shameful role in the Iraq War. But you see, where do people like this stand where Gaza is concerned, this awful business in Gaza? Blair, as a supposedly a Middle East peace envoy, is nowhere to be seen, as far as I know. And he's as much chance of getting anywhere with that problem as riding a bicycle to the moon. But if I could go back to the beginning of the last century, you see, we had this build-up. General Sir William Butler was sacked because he warned Lord Milner, who was the High Commissioner in South Africa, that the Boer War was being fomented. We had the Round Table being set up, the Round Table group under Sir Alfred, later Lord Milner, Milner's kindergarten, and of course the CFRR, Royal Institute of International Affairs, and later on, you see, in the early 50s, the Bilderberg group. Now, this is what is interesting, because the ultimate battle in this process of globalization is that of internationalism and collectivism versus nationalism. And you see this cropping up, and it's very interesting. And again, we're joining up a few dots. Now, this is the basis of the political game, I think, probably worldwide in the Western westernized countries. Now, Kenneth Clark was a senior minister under, I think, Thatcher and John Major, Conservative Party. He was known as the big hitter. Now, because Lord Mandelson has been appointed, and how he ever became a lord. I mean, he was sacked three times for various problems that should never have arisen with any respectable sort of politician. Mandelson is the Labour spokesman. He's been brought back by Gordon Brown as the big hitter on industry, trade and industry. So Cameron, the Conservative Party leader, brings in Kenneth Clark. Now, what do we see here?
Well, you're going to have to hold off on that as we're going to a break here. We'll be back in just a moment with Colonel Harry Turner, bring you up to date on what's going on across the water. Well, Colonel, you go right ahead with your description.
Well, I was talking about the big hitter, the big beast, Kenneth Clark, a former senior government minister, back on the Conservative Party front bench behind leader David Cameron. But already there's a press cutting from the 22nd of January that Clark is warning Cameron that he risks being seen as a right-wing nationalist by President Obama. Now, you see, right-wing nationalists, right-wing, anything nationalist is condemned as right-wing. And, of course, in extreme cases, as fascist, neo-fascist, far-right, hard-right, and the rest. But national identity is exactly the polarized opposite of internationalism. Now, here we have a feature on Russia, Putin's Russia. Now, Putin, of course, has been running rings around the West because he knows his job. Soviet trained, without any doubt. But you see, a subheading here on this article on Russia and its tanks rolling into neighboring countries and the media under state control and Kremlin policies shrouded in secrecy. Subheading, now the main ideological ideas are nationalism and anti-Americanism. It's the nationalism, you see. Here, Russia is ploughing its own furrow, and that is not welcome to the international chorus. Nationalism is out, and Putin has dug his heels in, and that is exactly the criticism he gets. But you see this occurring time and time again. I look at the original treaty, the European Coal and Steel Community. Now, our move into Europe, as Hilaire de Berrier's writings show, our move into Europe had the American tax-free foundations behind it. They were keen to get us into Europe. And again, it is the concentration, centralization of power. But this treaty, which was quite innocent sounding, and people weren't that well aware of it in the public domain generally, incorporated four institutions: a high authority, which became the commission and the bureaucracy, a very oppressive bureaucracy; a common assembly, which of course is their parliament; a special Council of Ministers, well, there is a Council of Ministers, and a European Court of Justice. Well, a Court of Justice.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Hold that thought.
These four factors.
Hold that thought.
Have continued the European Union has been consolidated.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Colonel Barry Turner. We're talking a little bit about, of course, this whole idea of these radicals who are nationalists, like Putin, and of course you equate anybody who is a nationalist, they're a bad person, you equate them with fascism and Nazism. Ladies and gentlemen, what they want to do is do away with national sovereignty. They want to mold us into a world government, and anybody who doesn't want to go along with that is immediately a radical, a nationalist, a fascist. Putin is a nationalist. Well, who'd want to be a nationalist like Putin? Well, let me tell you that they're playing games with our minds, because the real objective is to destroy the sovereignty of the United States and Great Britain, to mold the whole world into a one world government. And if you haven't read Henry Kissinger's tremendous article, you can find it up on the Internet, January 12th, this year, January 12, 2009, International Herald Tribune, Henry Kissinger, New World Order, and he basically tells you that this whole world financial collapse, he doesn't tell you they've created it, but they have, is an opportunity now, a wonderful opportunity. They're working on a timetable. They're going to use the destruction of the wealth of our people and the suffering of our people and people throughout the world to bring about their world government. These are evil people. You go right ahead, Colonel.
One point I missed talking about Mandelson, Lord Mandelson and Kenneth Clark, is that both of these people are Bilderbergers. Now, I believe on the attendance pattern that Kenneth Clark is the right wing, should we say, in inverted commas, successor to the aging Lord, got his name now. That Mandelson is the successor to the late Lord Roald of Ibsen. In other words, these two are regular Bilderbergers, and Mandelson is, of course, friendly, he's on record as friendly with Sir Evelyn Rothschild, his American entrepreneur wife, who is a friend of Dr. Henry Kissinger. So you see, you're linking two leading politicians in the current government who are linked to the Bilderberg Group and to the international movers and shakers. And of course, these are the people who clearly have a great hand in the economic and financial pattern that has brought us to our knees. I mean, these are the world's movers and shakers, the big bankers and so on, the big industrialists. So there is a link there, but there's another link come up here. I came across this cutting, I don't know where it came from, it was in my files, about a U.S. Army, United States Army hitman, admitting that he was ordered to kill General George Patton. Now, I believe it is fair to say that General Patton, apart from being keen to press on to Prague and Berlin, did know a great deal about the One World plot. It was something he'd worked out himself. It's a long time since I read his diaries, many years, but you see, it's been around for a long time, and my impression is that, and well, this article is quite clear, he was stopped by Eisenhower from going any further. And he lost his petrol supplies and so on, which immobilized him. But the reading here is that he was killed before he did, because he knew too much.
Well, now, we actually carry a book written by a man, Mr. Wilcox, who interviewed the assassin and other people who were involved with the murder of George Patton. We carry the book, Target Patton by Robert Wilcox. That's Target Patton by Robert Wilcox. A must reading for anybody who wants to understand the true nature of the evil that exists at the highest levels of the American government back in 1945, and it still exists there today. Go right ahead.
Well, while you've been talking, I've just been scanning down the column of this press report. There you are, Robert Wilcox is mentioned. So that links a few dots in a minor sort of way. But you see, falling short of Prague, falling short of Berlin, let the Russians in. Now, this is exactly what we should logically, philosophically, and politically prevent it happening. And because Patton threatened this opening of the doors to the Soviet Union, the takeover of Eastern Europe, he paid the price. It's a continuing story. I mean, we have to be, of course, controlled. Apart from our financial, economic problems, we have the problem of society being progressively dumbed down. Now, this fits the pattern as well and joins up the same line of dots, because the important thing is to stop the, shall we say, middle classes, the thinking, educated classes, from cottoning on to what's happening. And this, of course, has led to the dumbing down of society. We have a small organization, very well organized, from London by two young people who are very switched on the campaign against political correctness. A subheading on the leaflet I've just plucked out of my letter rack: political correctness is robbing us of our identity. What we can't talk about. Now, in the middle of this leaflet, there's a picture of a young woman, and it's broken down into the pattern of a jigsaw. And she's holding up a piece of jigsaw with her lips on, her mouth. And, of course, in her picture, of course, it's a blank where the jigsaw fits. In other words, we are being deprived of the independence of thought and expression and action. And this, of course, is another angle of the control of the population to smooth the way for this global power. But what socialists, of course, always forget or conveniently omit to mention is that somebody has to run it. And we get to this question: is the consolidation of power, the progressive consolidation of power, the attempt to consolidate financial and economic power we've seen, the power over people, the consolidation of industries, the multinational corporations, of the banking system, what is the seed corn of this? Where is the kernel? I've asked this before, the kernel, K-E-R-N-E-L. Where is this glowing core which is controlling this? And it's very difficult to see any sort of answer. It's either it's self-sustaining, or it is there's a satanic element of good versus evil, and I think there's a strong case for that. Something is driving mankind ultimately to its own destruction.
But of course, it's not mankind is not going there. We are being driven in that direction. Of course, in your country, you have the Fabian Socialists, but you also have an organization known as the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which is the British counterpart of the Council on Foreign Relations. But what everybody has missed is that both of these were front organizations for something known as the British Roundtable, which was a front organization for the Association of Helpers, which was a front organization for the Society of the Elect, which is a front organization for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created back in 1891, is beautifully described by Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. But what Professor Quigley and everybody, or most of the people who have written about Cecil Rhodes' secret society and all of these subsequent organizations that can be traced back to that, is that Cecil Rhodes was involved in the occult, as was Lord Milner, as was Lord Esser, as was a man named William Stead, who was one of the four founding members of this. William Stead was into spiritualism, he was into theosophy, he was into Luciferianism, he was tapping into this mysterious power that has always been there with the ultimate goal of creating a world government. And that, Colonel, is the mysterious power that is behind this. There is a spiritual power behind everything going on, moving us towards this world government, world religion, world economic system, and may heaven help us.
Well, I've no doubt you're right. I mean, there's enough being put in writing, and your book, Brotherhood of Darkness, bears this out. But I have three examples of the satanic power which came to me independently from three different sources. And somebody who's been on your program has been working to identify, to expose satanic practice in the childcare system, where local authority workers are involved with or controlled by satanic powers in removing children from the care of their parents. It is terribly sinister, and it's very real. I have no doubt at all, as you say, from top to bottom, it exists at the very top. And if there is, shall we say, in our terms, a Christian polarity, the positive polarity, then it follows that there's an equal and opposite polarity in a negative way, the satanic one. But it's not that easily identified, which, of course, is why we have this problem. And, of course, there's no way it is going to be to expose itself, to be challenged. But I remember some years ago, a lady, very ordinary sort of lady, was involved with the pedophilia problem in East Anglia in this country, on the eastern coast. And she was getting a lot of support from the local authorities and from the police. And it was obviously a very nasty situation. Again, you see, young children, pedophilia. And then she invoked the satanic connotation. She had good reason to do so. And all of a sudden, the official channels dried up, and she found a most unpleasant situation where everything she was being hitherto trying to expose was blocked. And she wrote a book about it, which I have. But you see, this is a very real challenge, and it is pretty ghastly. But you see, you dumb down the public, make damn certain they don't think this way. This, of course, goes back to the ideological struggle in Soviet politico-military terms. It goes back to the Frankfurt School, as we know, in 1923, the School for Social Research in Germany. I know the four names. I can know Max Horkheimer, Theodor Adorno, who I think was behind the student uprisings of the 1960s, Herbert Marcuse, and Max Fromm. And their task has been ever since to destabilize society as we know it. And this, of course, is the long march through the institutions. I've said that before, Gramsci. And now we have the products of the infiltration of society, of the education system, the breakup of the church, and very senior figures complicit in the deterioration in society. And this is, should we say, quite fairly, the satanic element of what is afoot, because they do not want a society which can express itself, can take action on what they see. They're diverting them with golf and all the entertainment and the rest of it. I mean, for example, we had a man, he's a Jonathan Ross. I think, in my view, he's a slob, but he was paid millions as a British Broadcasting Corporation chat show host. I've listened to him, and I turn the set off. It's quite sickening. It's vulgar, and he went too far with a comedian, and they put a scam across. I think it was on television, which vilified or made fun of some actor's daughter and her sex life. It was quite outrageous. It hit the headlines. They were both sacked. Well, Ross was suspended. Now, going through the last 3-4 months, it's been quiet. All of a sudden, the British Broadcasting Corporation have put this slob back in the front line as a chat show host. I mean, he's apologized and so on, but his manner, his manners, his appearance, all down market. It's dumbing down, and the public lack it up. Now, what is the British Broadcasting Corporation doing, putting this man back in the public eye as a star?
Well, of course, I think that what they do, and we see this here in this country, they pick the people to be in key positions, you know, in the entertainment industry or, you know, on talk shows, who will actually do everything they can to destroy Christianity. Because, of course, this is the thing. This is the reason they took God and prayer out of our schools. There was no wall of separation between church and state. They wanted to destroy the religious foundation of our country. They've done a very good job of it. They've infiltrated our Catholic seminaries. They've infiltrated our Protestant seminaries. Certainly over there in Great Britain, you have an Archbishop of Canterbury who, how anybody could follow his leadership is beyond me. If this man is a Christian, then I'm a large stone. I mean, he degrades Christianity at every turn. And what they're doing is tearing the Christian church apart in your country and in my country. And the force behind this, of course, is Satanism.
Well, While the public sleeps, of course, on these matters for the most part, or postures, without getting anywhere, we had another diversion for the public, Strictly Come Dancing. Now, this is a dancing competition that went on for weeks, and there was a set of adjudicators, and various well-known figures took part. And it was a ballroom dancing competition. Now, this you know, attracted a great deal of public attention, and then there were one or two disputes. Inevitably, you have a dispute, which, of course, you know, generates even further public interest. Anything like that, and away you go. But you see, we have a country here which is fighting, punching well above its weight in a war in Afghanistan that nobody really understands. We can't understand why we're there, except that Poodle Brer, of course, overextended his forces quite openly, knowingly, in Afghanistan, and we're stuck with it. There are men and the occasional women losing arms and legs who never will dance again.
But of course, the thing
and
is,
where, you know, where is the balance in public morality here?
But
it's generated
course,
this way.
But Colonel, the thing is that the United States and Great Britain went into Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden. And when he escaped, they just stayed there and continued killing people, and they've killed the Taliban. But people have forgotten that it was the United States that had financed the Taliban from its very inception. And if you, of course, were to read George Bush's speech on the 20th or the 21st of September 2001, he told the American people that evening that America was the largest source of humanitarian aid for the Taliban, or for Afghanistan, which was the Taliban. The Taliban, of course, were able to do away with the drugs. The Americans can't do away with the drugs. Did we go in because we didn't want to do away with the drugs? So many people believe that other people in our government who are very much involved in the drug traffic, and after all, why the Taliban had destroyed the major source of drugs. Now they may very well be growing them to try to finance their activities, but they're still getting money from the Pakistani government that is financed by our government. Why don't we just stop funding the Pakistanis and cut off the funds to the Taliban? Well, currently we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, there's a great deal more, as ever. I think we've covered a fair amount of ground. But I know, we're in a mess. Society's in a mess. And this centralization of power is exactly what's going on, and something has to be done to stop it. The public has got to wake up, and I've said this repeatedly. People at the grassroots have got to take this problem by the scruff of the neck, put down their golf clubs, and control the politicians. Our latest problem is a big scandal in the House of Lords, because it is totally corrupt since they got rid of most of the hereditary peers, the noblesse oblige factor, put in life peers, nominated life peers, along paymasters for the government behind the scenes. And these people have been making a business of it, taking money, taking bribes, in effect. That's what it amounts to. And this has suddenly exploded. Now, when you have a society in this condition, you've got a hell of a lot of problems. And there's a rubber wall between our politicians and the people on the ground. And local people, local government, have got to become strong enough to fight this and control their politicians, who, for the most part, vote on the party whip without any conscience. Block voting, in other words. And this isn't democracy. This isn't democracy. This is the exercise of power through the party political machine. And everything else follows.
Well, that has always been the curse of democracy. It is a wonderful idealistic theory, but it just doesn't work because it always becomes subject to power. People vote for the congressman or for the representative or the parliamentarian who promises to give them the most, and they centralize power with government. And, of course, once they do that, of course, why, they lose their freedom. And, of course, politicians will pander to the people who tell them what to do. And believe me, your party bosses over there, just like our party bosses, are some of the finest politicians that money could buy. And unfortunately, they do not represent the people, they represent the power elite. And that's the problem with democracy. America was different. We had a system where the power of government was limited, and as Thomas Jefferson said, we'll take the chains off of the people and put them onto government. Well, unfortunately, they've taken them off of government and they're welding them to put back on the people here. And I suspect the same thing is happening over there. Colonel, we're just about out of time. I appreciate so much your being with us. And we'll just have to keep talking and hopefully that you can get those people over there and all your friends in Great Britain to listen to our programs on the Internet 9 hours a day at radioliberty.com. And God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us and being our guest.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Good night. Goodbye.
Good night. Oh, okay. Fine. That was Colonel Barry Turner. Well, the Dr. Stan, that was Colonel Barry Turner with us from England, and they have the same problems over there. But behind everything going on in Great Britain and behind everything going on here in the United States are powerful, spiritual, supernatural powers. And, of course, there are people who are in contact with the beings from the other dimension. If you have not yet actually read the material that we have in my syllabus, it's entitled The Planned Police State, or Heard Our Talk, why we actually quote extensively from the people who are in touch with the beings from the other dimension. If you've not yet seen the little pamphlet put out by the Luciferian organization, the Lucis Trust, why we'd be glad to send you a free copy. It's called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy, where they tell you they have their people planted in financial institutions all throughout the world. And, of course, they work in concert. Some of the people know what they're doing. Others are simply opportunists. If you want to get ahead in this world, if you want to make a fabulous fortune, all you have to do is, of course, put yourself in under the direction of the spiritual forces that rule this world. You can get in contact with them. But let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you do not want to do that. These are not imaginary. They are very real. And they're behind so many of the supernatural manifestations we see and witness. And I've talked to people who've actually witnessed these things personally. Certainly this is behind this whole thing of the so-called UFOs. I mean, these are simply, in the large part, predominantly of vehicles, of manifestations of the other dimension. You need to get into the background of the alien abductions. They're not imaginary. These things are very, very real. But, of course, there really are these beings that can materialize and dematerialize. And if you look and see what's going on today, most of it doesn't make sense. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to listen to my talk on the Forbidden Secrets, and now we've got this great, wonderful new DVD by Chris Pinto, which you've got to get and watch. It's called The Eye of the Phoenix, and it will take you into the background of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, where they have hidden their emblem in plain sight. You see it every day. You must understand the symbology on the back of the American dollar bill. It's not there by accident. These people know what they're doing. And they laugh because they're so foolish. And it goes into the background of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was deeply involved in the occult. And it was the fact that he appointed people to the Supreme Court, and they were Masons, and they were the ones who took God and prayer out of our schools. And until you understand the sequence of events, so much of what's going on really doesn't make sense. And so our plea to you is, get suddenly this great new DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't read Brotherhood of Darkness or seen the DVD, you need to get it. If you haven't heard our talk on the Forbidden Secret, you need it. But if you're only going to get one thing, get the Eye of the Phoenix, because it will give you a tremendous amount of information. Then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get the other DVDs put out by our friend Chris Pinto. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. That's The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The Riddles in Stone. We have a great DVD of when Chris was here talking to us. It was called The Atlantis Connection. And then, of course, Constance Cumby was here at the same time, and her DVD, The Emergence. And we have a four-tape set of my interviews with Constance. We call it The Aquarian Conspiracy. Why do we call it the Aquarian Conspiracy? Because that's what they call it. And, of course, they are the millions of people who are affiliated with these occult organizations moving us towards a new age. And you go back and you read Barack Obama's speech there, his inauguration speech. It's interesting, he used the term New Age not once but twice, a new era and another. And we are entering a new era, and that's what the change is all about. But it is not a change for the better. It is the destruction of America as we know it, moving into a total fascist society where government will control us from the cradle to the grave in the name of, course, controlling this economic crisis that has been created intentionally and purposely. And if you don't believe it, read Henry Kissinger's article in the International Herald Tribune on the 21st of January, finally the 12th of January of this year, and then please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.